Cincinnati Call. Baseball Magnets Cold Conference. Kansas City, Missouri, February 13th, 1920. Representatives of the baseball teams of the West arrived here today and went into session at the YMCA with the following baseball magnets present: J.T. Blunt, Detroit Stars; W.A. Kelly, Washington, D.C.; L.S. Cobb, St. Louis Giants; John Matthews, Dayton Marcos; Joe Green, Chicago Giants; C.T. Taylor, Indianapolis ABCs; Elwood C. Nose, Indianapolis Freeman; Andrew Rube Foster, American Giants; Charles Marshall, Indianapolis Ledger; J.L. Wilkerson of this city; and Carl B. Lewis, sporting editor of the Chicago Defender. Foster Springs Big Surprise. One of the big surprises of the first day's meeting was when Rube Foster uncovered the fact that he had a charter incorporated for a National Negro Baseball League. When Rube displayed the charter, the magnates were dumbfounded. The league is now incorporated in the state of Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, and Maryland. Then Mr. Foster and Mr. Blunt discussed tentative plans for the circuit of 1921. Dr. Howard Smith met with the delegation at the depot. A smoker and dinner has been arranged. The second day's meeting will be held tomorrow. Every manager was very enthusiastic and said he would carry the same enthusiasm back to his hometown. The outlook for 1921, they claim, would be the greatest in the history of baseball.
This is Josh Burke from the Bethlehem Area Public Library.
Matthew Rothfuss, also from the Bethlehem Area Public Library.
This is This Week in 1920s Baseball.
Episode 2.
So, thanks for joining us. We knew when we were going to talk about the 1920 season that there is an entire parallel season to the MLB season, and that would be the Negro Leagues, and what we didn't realize, or I didn't realize anyway, is exactly how important the year 1920 was, and particularly, if not this week, we missed it by a little bit, but this month, exactly 100 years ago, is really one of the most historic dates in the history of the Negro Leagues.
It definitely is. I believe the date is February 13th.
And on that date, as you heard in our opening read, was when Rube Foster and some other, I believe it's pronounced magnates.
Was that magnets or magnates, Josh?
I think they're magnates. And they were meeting in Kansas City in the YMCA, a group of black baseball owners, representatives, newspaper writers, and they met to really lay down the formation of the very first unified Negro National League. The history is a little messy, you know? It's not as, like, history's always that way, right? Like, it's not quite as clean as we think, because there were lots of leagues that were started and then floundered. There were independent leagues. There were semi-pro leagues. There were even integrated leagues before the modern era. But what happened on this week in 1920s baseball really was important, because Rube Foster got everyone together and he said, I think that they thought it was just going to be an opening meeting.
I think we established that he kind of shocked them. So he gets all these people together, and they're just thinking that there's going to be a plan, and right, to discuss a possible major league. And suddenly he presents an actual charter.
Yeah, Foster brings out this charter for the actual formation of the league. So at that point, there were many leagues, mostly regional, even a city league, like I said, semi-pro, different things. But Foster said, let's take black baseball to the next level. Let's stop stealing each other's players. Let's have a contract where we honor one another, where each of the cities represented has their own team, and we'll travel, and we'll have, you know, our standings, our playoffs. We'll have our league as legit as we can make. And Foster brought them all together, and the other thing that's amazing is they imagined that then the league would start the next year. Foster, if in that newspaper piece, they were alluding to a team that would begin in 1921, but Foster.
I was confused.
Ball.
I was confused about that. So they did start. They did start the 1920 season.
Yeah, that's as far as I can tell. Yeah. The original plan at that February meeting was like, let's plan for the 21 season, And Foster was so far along and such a demon of his, like, organizational skills that, like, he brought them together in February, play ball April. It was a brand new league from nothing. So so let's talk about Rube Foster a little bit. He is in the Hall of Fame. He is, first of all, he looks exactly like Biggie Smalls. If you look at his picture, it, seriously, it's awesome. He looks a lot like our band Notorious B.I.G. And he was himself a great pitcher. He's from Texas. He played on a Waco independent team. And then he played in some various levels of organized ball, independent, semi-pro, integrated. Do you know how he got his nickname, Rube?
No, but I'm guessing is he from like a small town?
So, no. I mean, he is, but that's not where his name came from. His name came from the white pitcher, Rube Waddell. Have you heard that name?
I have heard that
name.
Yeah,
so unfortunately, we don't have to talk about him too much in this podcast because he didn't pitch in 1920. He was already out of baseball. But he is one of the all-time eccentric, like, weird dudes of old-timey baseball.
Yeah, and I think he also, I think by 1926, he had checked into, like, a mental hospital or something.
Which one? Waddell?
No, Rube Foster. Oh, you're on Waddell. Yeah.
But they both had some problems.
Yeah. It's just...
But Rube Waddell was a great white pitcher, and Foster pitched against him as a young man in a exhibition integrated game. And at that time, Waddell was already an established pro. And
Waddell the one that had the winning streak, the famous winning streak? Was that Waddell? We'll have to look that up.
Yeah. We'll do some Rube Waddell digging. But what happened was that this young African-American pitcher Foster beat this established pro in a game. And then after that, everyone started calling him Rube. So I'm like, I think that when you beat someone, you get to steal their nickname. I think
it's
that
the power that you get to gain their power, which is in old timey baseball is your nickname. That is your power.
I think that. And of course, like a lot of stuff, no one can exactly prove that that story is true. But Foster himself did repeat it, that that's where he got the name Rube from, was after he beat the great, you know, you could see it, like, you know, you could see it maybe, right? Like, say you pitched in some exhibition game and you struck out Mike Trout. Everyone would start, but they'd be like, hey, Mike Trout, or you beat him in some competition. Maybe they would give you his nickname. Mike Trout doesn't. He needs a nickname. That's a separate story. But, so Foster was this great young player. He was really successful in his own right. And here closer to the 1920s was more of a organizer, manager than a player himself anymore. But he pulled all these guys together in February 1920. And then a few months later, that season started. And it was really the birth of kind of the unified Negro League.
So let's list here. I think I have a list here. We can list the founding teams of the Negro National League. Do you want me to read them off here?
Yeah, do it.
Okay. So we have the Chicago American Giants, and I believe that was Rube Foster's team.
Yeah, they were surprisingly the best team.
Surprisingly.
The guy who
founded
the league.
There was talk of corruption and favoritism with the umpires.
I mean, the guy who founded the league somehow got all the best players.
Somehow, yeah. There was the Chicago Giants. That's strange.
The American
Giants.
We
had two Giants teams in Chicago.
And then I'll tell you, the ex-Giants, they're from somewhere else.
We had the Cuban Stars, Dayton Marcos, Detroit Stars. See, there's a lot of shared names here.
I like the Marcos. That's a cool name.
Everyone's favorite Kansas City Monarchs, the Indianapolis ABCs. Now, that's a great name.
That is a good name.
And the St. Louis Giants.
Why are they a third
Giants team.
That's confusing. But Rube Foster's team did have kind of the best talent. But they part of what they did was honor each other's contracts. So I think that's part of the reason why they had it strikes me as like a fantasy baseball draft, because they had those newspaper men there too to sort of like make sure that none of the owners were claiming like all the best players. So they had this pool of talent, right? And they had to make sure it was broken up equally, or at least semi-equally, to the point that that no one team would run away with it. Although Foster's Giants,
they were pretty good in their smoker that they booked. Did we ever establish what that was?
No. If you listen to the opening article, there they presented or they enjoyed They enjoyed a smoker.
A dinner and a smoker. They booked, right? They reserved a dinner and a smoker.
Yeah, so we're going to reach out to the user, to the listeners here, and tell us if you know what a smoker is in that context. Find us on Twitter at 1920s Baseball, and
let us know.
Let us know. What is a smoker?
You'll get a shout out next episode.
All right, so breaking our format here of sticking to this week in 1920s Baseball, we're going to jump ahead to the end of the 1920 season. You will be unsurprised to know who had far and away the best record at the end of the season. Guess who it was?
Was it the one of the Giants teams?
Hey, first of all, five-eighths of the teams are called the Giants?
Or the Stars.
Or yep. The Stars.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was Rube Foster's Giants, the Chicago American Giants, had a record of 43-17. So they were pretty good. Guess who came in last place?
Was it a Giants team?
It was the Chicago Giants. First place, Chicago American Giants. Last place, Chicago Giants. The other teams were the Detroit Stars, second place, Kansas City Monarchs, third, then Indianapolis ABCs, Cuban Stars, St. Louis Giants, and the Dayton Marcos. So let's talk about this Cuban Stars team a little
bit. Yeah, because you might have a little question. Okay, why is there a team named the Cuban Stars?
And it turns out
that there was a team comprised of Latin ballplayers. It looks like they've been around since 1907 or so, that only played road games and had predominantly Latin ballplayers playing on them. And were pretty good. So let's read off some of the names. Josh, want to read off some of those names?
It's funny because some of these names are modern ball players. Jose Lopez, Eufemio Abreu. Phillies had a great Abreu. Cheo Hernandez, Valentin Edreque, Bernardo Barro, Patio Herrera, Matias Rios. So these were all Cuban Latin players who were barnstorming in the U.S. and put their team together to compete against the Stars of the Negro Leagues in Rube Foster's NNL. So these guys were also called the Cuban Stars of Havana, the Cuban Stars West, the Stars of Cuba, the Cuban All-Stars, the Havana Reds. That's a funny name. I guess Cuba wasn't communist back then. Called them the Reds.
It was funny. Foreshadowing.
But they were another piece of that complicated history where this team of Cuban Stars played in the American Negro Leagues against Rube Foster and his crew, and they were pretty decent. They ended up one game above 500. They're 35-34. Their top pitcher, Jose LeBlanc, top hitter, Bienvenido Jimenez. Marcos are a good name, but they were a pretty bad team. They were 16-36. The Chicago Giants were 5-31. That's pretty bad. That's a rough year. The Chicago American Giants, 43 wins. Chicago Giants, 5 wins. That's
a giant catastrophe.
It's a giant catastrophe. So as we proceed through the 1920 season, looking at the MLB stats, we'll also check in with our friends from the NNL. We'll see how those players are doing. We'll see if we find some headlines that sneak their way into the press. We'll check out the archives of the African American newspapers as well, and we'll follow along the highs and lows of what really was an amazing year, completely historical in his own right. The year 1920 was in black baseball.
Yeah, we'll do it. And I think winter's getting warmer.
Winter's getting warmer.
MLB season's coming up.
It's kind of fun to have a 100-year season, 100 years ago to look at, because this season's it's a little depressing.
Modern, very depressing.
Yeah, modern baseball news. Of course, 1920 was a huge scandalous year of...
We haven't learned much, have we?
We haven't learned much with gambling.
Just new ways to cheat.
And lawsuits and cheating and everything else. So, yes, it's just somehow seems a little more charming through the lens of history, but it does tell us that not much has changed and that... you know, still a great game, though, Matt.
Great game.
I was just, that was supposed to sound like a ball hitting a bat. It didn't.
It's out of here.
So stay tuned for listener questions, and catch us next time on This Week in 1920s Baseball.
Yep. Thanks so much.
Podsman Matt here with our first listener question. This comes to us from Jack in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Jack wants to know, who is the ballplayer pictured on the podcast homepage and Twitter profile? Well, that's a good question, Jack. That handsome mug belongs to Roy Butch Sanders, a player who was briefly mentioned in Episode 1 because the Phillies were scouting him in advance of the 1920 season. He didn't make the team that year, but we found his picture online and thought he had such a quintessential 1920s baseball face that we'd use him as the unofficial mascot of this week in 1920s baseball. You were never famous as a ball player in your time, Roy Sanders, but you are internet famous 100 years later, and we thank you. And thank you, Jack, for the question.
I do see that there's a pitcher named Dizzy Dismukes. I wonder if he stole Dizzy Dean's name in a nickname.
He beat Dizzy in a game,
yeah.
And then got to pick his name,
yeah.
And gain his powers.
And there's a Bullet Rogan. That's a good name.